So, I should have mentioned or encouraged you to be present for your lunch and taste it. Anybody actually taste their lunch? Oh, good. What a mindful group this is. Very good. Let's just take a few moments. It won't be a long meditation because it's easy to go to sleep after lunch. But just a little to gather, and then we'll start by just seeing if there's any questions or things that came up from the morning before getting into the afternoon. But just 5 minutes right now. Once again, come into your body and your mind. Don't try to make anything happen. Just relax into this moment. Be here with the way things are. If your mind wanders, when you realize it, just let go of the thought. Let go of the judgment. And come right back to now. The present moment is waiting for you just to reconnect and return. If you're not sure what to pay attention to, you can always connect with the fact that you're sitting here, alive, breathing. this last minute, let go of any agenda. Let yourself rest in this moment of your life that's never been here before, will never be here again. Just be here for it. So I thought we'd spend a little time as we start the afternoon just seeing if there's anything that's come up from the morning about this topic that you want to bring up as a question or issue. We have a number of other things that we want to explore, but just a quick check-in. Here's one. Is it on?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, that's great.
When I feel overwhelmed or I procrastinate, I've been checking in kind of myself, and I realize sometimes it's when I'm fearful of something. And so I liked what you said about little tiny steps and being compassionate with yourself. Because I don't feel like a fearful person, but I've had situations in my life where, you know, little traumas or big traumas, and, you know, to confronting those brings up fear for me, and I don't like to deal with it. So I'll just kind of stuff it, and I like I said, what you said about just taking baby steps to help me overcome that.
Any question in there, or just
just kind of an acknowledgement of thank you for that tip.
Okay, all right, yeah. Just again, you have a lot of company here. Fear is basically what keeps us from connecting to all the wisdom and the love inside. Is a beautiful book. Maybe some of you are familiar, the title by Jerry Jampolsky, Love is Letting Go of Fear. So at the heart of any contraction that we feel, generally you'll find fear in one way or another. It might take the form of judgment or aversion or frustration or whatever, but generally there's this quality of not either not feeling safe or being afraid that things won't turn out the way we want, or, you know, many different manifestations. One thing just to say about fear, it's good that you can name that and just see, oh, maybe that's what's going on. First, don't take it personally. It's part of the human experience. And also that fear is not necessarily the enemy. That fear is, there can be a healthy aspect of fear. It's could be a danger signal. Okay, something that I need to be careful of around here. But also, and this is something that maybe in the meditation practice you see, that anytime you're going from the familiar and the known to the unknown, to the unfamiliar, to new territory, there's bound to be some fear. That's, you know, whether you like going on roller coaster rides, or, you know, sometimes we get off on the danger or the anxiety. Woo! But often it's like, I don't want to go there. And when you think about it, when the fear isn't about danger, when it's more about an internal getting out of your comfort zone, if you're getting out of your comfort zone, chances are you're going to feel uncomfortable. And so fear is a kind of, can be seen as an ally, as a scout, that's like the membrane between the familiar, the known, the safe, and the unknown, and stretching yourself. And in that way, when you're feeling, if you can use it as a practice, oh, there's something here that's kind of making me feel a little bit uncomfortable and alive, then it's, you can see, oh, I'm about to stretch. Jack has a great way of saying it. Fear, another way of thinking of fear is it's saying about to grow. You know? And it, if you think of it in that way, it's, oh, okay, you can make it like an adventure and see it as an invitation to stretch yourself. If you really are about growing and waking up, then you're going to, a key part of that is learning to work with that fear and seeing it as an ally, as a way to stretch yourself. So thank you. Is there another? Here's. Yeah, raise your hand.
I was speaking to my friend at lunch about what interferes with my joy, that I am really a very joyful person until I listen to the news or I see what's going on with the pain and suffering on the world stage, i.e. Syria, and the children primarily that are suffering. And so there's so much overwhelming suffering going on currently. I was wondering if you could speak to how to manage that for someone who's compassionate and cares about the people in Syria.
Yeah, that's a big one. And we can get not only moved by the news, but almost addicted to it, that, whether it's, the craziness in the world, and we start to see the world through that lens. So one thing to keep in mind, that I try to keep in mind, is what makes the news is usually what's sensational and going to grab our attention. That's the way it's set up. And so if you start to think that the world is going down the tubes and, there's just gloom and doom everywhere, you're missing out on the fact that everything that doesn't make the news is basically that people are being civil and kind to each other. And that part of the curriculum on this planet is opening up to the sorrow and the joy. And if you're just depressed and in despair because you see all the awful things around us, and that's what's weighing you down, you're missing out on all the goodness in life, and you become just one more person overwhelmed by sorrow and sadness. Maybe I'll read to you from my book a quote that I think beautifully sums this up, by Howard Zinn, who was He wrote The People's History of the United States. He happened to be John Kabat-Zinn's father-in-law, but he was a brilliant historian in his own right, just writing the non-whitewashed history of America. And he wrote this essay called The Optimism of Uncertainty. He says, and this is kind of addressing your question, an optimist isn't necessarily a blithe, slightly sappy whistler in the dark of our time. To be hopeful in bad times is not just foolishly romantic. It's based on the fact that human history is a history not only of cruelty, but also of compassion, sacrifice, courage, kindness. What we choose to emphasize in this complex history will determine our lives. If we see only the worst, it destroys our capacity to do something. But if we remember those times and places, and there are so many, where people have behaved magnificently, this gives us energy to act and at least the possibility of sending this spinning top of a world in a different direction. So to see the bigger picture, and yeah, while there's never been as much craziness and self-destruction and the human species creating, you know, awful things, there's never been as much consciousness ever in this world. There's never been where you can tweet something. Even though I've never tweeted anything, but I know that it's powerful, and it can just start a whole revolution of consciousness. And there's never been a connection and a caring for the planet on a species level, a humanity level, as there is now. So as one of my friends says, we're in a race between fear and consciousness. And consciousness, I think, trumps trumps fear. Whether we have enough time is questionable, but the more we can bring our own consciousness and love and goodness and joy to the world, that is magnetizing. And so your heart breaks, and you let it break, but hold it in a context of gratitude for all the blessings in our life, and you become an agent that's acting out of love, not out of anger and outrage. Because underneath the outrage and the anger and the fear and the despair is a love that really wants to see this world go in the right direction. And the more you can connect with that place inside, that awakens that in others. When you're around somebody who's anxious and fearful and depressed and, oh my God, we're doomed, does that uplift you? Does that inspire you to make a difference? But if you are around people who really care, who really want to make a difference in the world, and they're coming from how much they love life, you want to be part of that. So it's not, you're not doing anyone a service to get weighed down by your own despair and fear. You don't know how it's going to turn out. But the more consciousness there is, the greater the possibility of awakening, because that's contagious just like everything else is. Yeah. And you let your heart break, but you let it break open, and you do what you can to make a difference in the world. Because if you're doing what you can instead of, I've got to save the world all by myself, that's too much to ask. But if you're doing what you can and saying, this is really nourishing me, like I said, action absorbs anxiety, Angie Arian's quote, then you're coming from a place of your compassion is leading the way rather than your fear. And that's contagious. Yeah, there was a hand in the back. Wait for the microphone. Yeah. Wait for the microphone.
No. I just wanted to ask
If
you could repeat the author of that quote.
Of this quote here. Howard Zinn. No, she was saying about this quote. This quote was Howard Zinn and it's in Awakening Joy. This is the hardcover version. On the optimism of uncertainty. Action absorbs anxiety, is Angelus Arian. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. There is a blocked car, a gray Subaru 7KMG363. Is that the car that needs to be moved or that? Yeah. Gray Subaru? Anyone? Yeah, you're looking at the deer. Yeah, yeah. Any gray Subaru in here? Not us again. Yeah. Okay. Is that another question? Okay. Yeah.
This might be something you're close enough.
Yes, that's good.
This might be something you're going to talk about later today. And it's not as wonderful as compassion for the world. It's a normal neurotics kind of thing of needing to let go of, for example, I was back east, some things didn't go well, and I kept trying to put that down as I was journeying over to see my daughter in St. Petersburg. And I was doing different little rituals of sending light and love and all this kind of stuff, but it was kind of like I was carrying a gray cloud like that of Peanuts character, and I didn't know how to just let it go so I could be present in that moment. I was not successful. Mm-hmm. Tried.
Yeah. So that's kind of, that's the next thing that we're going to be exploring about letting go of the stories in our mind. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we might as well go into that now. Did you? So, you know, it's one thing to let go of stuff or business. Cut out again? No, there it is. But the real freedom comes from letting go of the stories that we create for ourselves. It's so amazing how we might know better, but there we are just spinning our wheels over and over. Anybody ever notice that in their own mind? You know, and there you are, oh well, I'm a meditator, I go to Spirit Rock, you know, I'm learning to train my mind and my heart, you know. Damn it. She really did that. You know? And we just keep on hitting that replay button over and over and over again. And if somebody was putting our thoughts through the loudspeaker, you know, it would be cruel and inhuman punishment, right? And that's what we do to ourselves. So, a big part of the meditation practice is understanding both the fact that we do this and how to work with it. So letting go of stories is a huge part of this, the joy of letting go. Easier said than done. And I can say, you know, I can't say that I've mastered this myself, but it's very different now than it was when I first started practicing. And one of my main practice, okay, which you might just play around with, and we'll explore this for all of us. My main practice when I remember when I find myself caught, when I find myself struggling, is asking myself, what story am I believing right now? Or I might put it, what thought am I believing right now? Because one of the gifts in the meditation is that, especially if you've had a chance to do some retreats and where you've seen the mind in all its glory, where there's no hiding and you see all the ways that how subtle it gets, and you see these thoughts coming and going and coming and going, and that you have no control over at all, you know, there starts to be a little bit of compassion. And instead of looking at it and saying, oh gosh, look at my mind, it starts to switch a little bit to, oh, look at the mind. Look at how the mind gets caught and how the mind can be freed. And you don't take it quite so personally. It's something that we all share. We create these stories and then we get frightened. You know, maybe you've heard of this example of this guy who was a really good artist, and he goes out to a cave and he paints a life-size rendition of a ferocious tiger attacking. And he finishes his piece of art and then he looks at it at the end and he throws up his palette and brush and runs out. That's what we do. We create these paint these tigers and frighten ourselves with them. Isn't that weird? You know? And that just kind of shows the power of the mind. It can create the greatest Buddha fields and heaven realms, and it can create the darkest, deepest hell realms. That's the power of mind. That's why, you know, the Buddha in the opening lines of the Dhammapada, he says, we are what we think. With our thoughts we make the world. Think and act with a confused mind, and trouble will follow you as the ox as the cart follows the ox. We are what we think. With our thoughts we make the world. Speak or act with a clear mind, a pure mind, and happiness will follow you like your shadow, unshakable. The mind, untrained, is our worst enemy. And when it is trained, no one can help you as much, not even your father or mother or best friend. So this is all about learning to make friends with your mind. And part of that process of making friends is first seeing how the mind does this thing. And again, that takes a lot of compassion, and that takes a lot of patience, because you've practiced seeing things in a certain way. So rather than saying, I should be over this now, you are looking at the humbled and humbling reality of how the mind creates pain for us. Okay. So now there's a number of different ways that we can go, because there's many different stories that we create. Why somebody did what they did to us, how we were treated unfairly, and sometimes we were treated unfairly, and sometimes there's tremendous pain and hurt and anger and trauma that really needs to be honored and processed. So it's not that you just say, oh, get over it. You know, it's just my mind creating its stuff. Because besides just the mind, the body has gotten activated. And there we are carrying those fears and that contraction and that anger in our body, and something can trigger it off. So we've got to, you know, part of the process is really honoring all the feelings that have gotten stimulated and really learning to calm down and soothe the body, just so there can be enough space to see, oh, this is just my mind creating this and activating my body. You can't just say, okay, I should know better. Let's get on with it. And that's where it can be essential to have somebody who can hold your pain, whether it's in counseling or therapy or somatic experiencing. Somebody was talking about it on the break, which is a really great modality for working with trauma and pain, somatic experiencing or SE, or a friend, because when we're carrying it on within ourselves, it doesn't have any place to go, so it just keeps on festering and recycling, and we're caught in what I call the spin cycle in our minds. It just keep on replaying that. So to really process the pain and process the confusion that gets activated is a very key step to this. And you can't hurry up letting go. You can't say, come on already, why am I still holding on? You have to really honor all the feelings first, which is not an easy thing to do, to really honor and feel it all. And you feel it all in little amounts, in, you know, what I call titrating our dukkha. You just a little at a time. And, you know, I don't know if we'll... How many people have worked with feeling their feelings in a mindful way? So how about the acronym RAIN? How many people are familiar with RAIN? Not that many. So let's just do this as part of the process, because the first step is to just really honor the feelings. And I'll take you through a little guided process that you can use as part of this. The word RAIN describes a formula, a simple formula for holding your feelings, and the word stands for recognize, allow, investigate, and non-identify. Okay, so what does that mean? I'll explain a little before, and then I'll take you through it. So first, to recognize what you're feeling. So there you are, you've gotten activated. Yeah, she really did do that. And there you are in your story, full on. If you use it in a mindful way, the first thing to do is recognize, what am I feeling right now? And just even naming it in a very clear way, oh, this is rage, this is sadness, this is hurt. In that moment, you're actually neuropsychologically, you're moving from the activated emotional part of the brain to the neocortex that's saying, oh, this is rage. And you're diffusing a little bit to start, although your body might still be completely energized. But you first recognize it. Oh, that's what this is. And you bring some clarity to it. Then the A is allow or accept. I like allow. Just allowing for those feelings to be here for just a little while, because in that allowing, we are shifting our relationship. Usually, we want to get rid of it. No, get out of here. I don't want to feel this. I can't believe I'm feeling this rage again. And oh, I'm so petty. And but when you say, okay, here's this rage. Here's this anger. You're not feeding it with that resistance, because what you resist persists. The more you try to get rid of a feeling, the more you're hooked by it. So that's the second step. Allow. Just give it permission to be here. The third step is investigate, or bring an interest to it. Not analyze it, not try to figure out why it's here, but just letting yourself feel, oh, this is where I feel rage. I feel it in my belly or in my throat or my chest area or my jaw. Oh, this is what it feels like in the mind. Oh, yeah, let's feel this. Wow, that's intense. Oh, yeah, okay. And then the N is non-identify or non-identification, which is just a fancy word that means not taking it personally. So rather than, oh, I'm so pathetic for having all this anger, oh, like Jane said in the mindful self-compassion, oh, this is part of being human too. And so here is this anger held in an awareness that can see it. So let's just take it, go through this so that it's not just a conceptual kind of a thing. Just say you have something to work with. And as part of the first step in letting go of getting swept up by all the feelings when they get activated. But you can't let go until you honor them and process them. So you might sit up and close your eyes for a moment. And just to have something to work with, reflect on some challenging situation or relationship or issue that triggers some feelings that sometimes come up and confuse us, confuse you, catch you. Just bring that situation up so that you have something to work with. And see if you can access just even a little bit that feeling, that emotion, this issue. And now we'll experiment with this rain process. First is to recognize, what am I feeling right now? Whether it's anger or fear or loneliness or sadness or whatever. Just name it. In a very neutral or kind way. Oh, that's what this is. And now allow it to be here for just the next minute or so. Give it permission so that you can hold this old companion in a wiser way. Just allow it to be here. It's okay. Just let it be here. This challenging emotion. And now bring an investigative attitude, bring an interest, not figuring out, not analyzing, but just see, oh, when I feel this, where do I feel it? Where do I feel it in my body? In my belly? In my throat? In my heart? What does it feel like in there? Let your curiosity explore. How big an area is it inside? What are the sensations doing? Are they tight? Are they heavy? Are they agitated? Do they stay just the same or change one moment to another? Maybe let yourself explore, what does it feel like in the mind? Is it dark? Is it heavy? Is it open? Is it light? And just let it be how it is. Come back again, once again, to the body. Notice what's going on now. It might be like it was. It might have changed. Whatever is okay. And now, that non-identification or not taking it personally, just reflect on the fact that this is just part of being human. You don't have to blame yourself for it having arisen. It's just activating some part of inside, and you can hold it with a very kind awareness. But just honoring, this is what I'm feeling now. Maybe it's changed into something else. Maybe not. Maybe it's gone. Whatever is okay. Just part of being human. And now become grounded in the fact that you're sitting here and feel a connection to the earth, feel your body sitting on the chair or the ground. And then having done that, maybe you're stirred up a little bit, and we can just end this little exercise with a little bit of that self-compassion practice. And so I like, from the beginning, putting your hand right on your heart. Just try it right now. And just soothing yourself. You don't have to make anything happen. Wow, okay, this is hard. Well, that was tough. That was intense. That's just part of being human. That's part of life. May I hold this pain with kindness and compassion. Okay, and then when you like, you can very gently open your eyes. Does that make sense? Any question about that? So that would be the first step. And whether you use the RAIN acronym, you know, it's in Awakening Joy or in other books, if you'd like. But it's basically just letting yourself feel what you're feeling. That's the idea. A little bit at a time. And you might, if you're really intense, just for the next minute or half minute, let me feel this. And when it gets to be too much, then open your eyes and, or just look around and get grounded in it. But you're using the natural wisdom in you to hold all of those feelings. Because the more you try to push them away, you'll just keep on spinning your wheels. When you have a strong emotion, there's three things generally that are going on. One, there's the story. Yeah, he really did do that. There's the mental atmosphere in the mind. It might be tight, it might be agitated, it might be heavy or whatever swirling around. And there's the physical expression of it. Where do you think we spend most of our time when we're lost? Up in the story. And so when you can come right into your body and into your mind, then whatever, into the mental atmosphere, whatever is triggering it off, it's giving you a chance to make friends with that very old companion that's not so different than when you were a little boy or a little girl and got angry or frightened or whatever it was. Oh, there's this old companion, fear or rage or whatever. And so that's the first thing, to just honor what you're feeling. And then you might just hold it in a bit different way. Suppose, and we were going to go through this about letting go of stories, particularly where it's about anger and the need for forgiveness, and particularly letting go. One aspect of letting go is letting go of the past, letting go of what's happened to you and been activated, that if every time you keep replaying, it comes out the same way. You know, this wonderful line, forgiveness is giving up all hope of a better past. It's really powerful. Forgiveness is giving up all hope of a better past. You cannot change the past. You can learn from it. You can keep on growing. But if you keep on replaying that and saying, why did that happen to me? And that was not fair. Yeah, life sometimes isn't fair. But if you learn from it, then there's nothing wasted. Then there's no mistakes as long as you're learning from it. So forgiveness, it was one of the things that we wanted to take a look at in this letting go, particularly letting go of the past. And just to keep in mind, you have to honor the feelings and then understand with some compassion why people do what they do. People do what they do and cause harm either because they're not clear or they're caught up in some kind of ignorance if you do something that's hurt, or else that they don't meet your expectations. Not necessarily that they're trying to hurt you. The Dalai Lama has this great teaching. He says, when somebody does something that's upsetting to you, understand that generally speaking, it's not that they're doing it to hurt you. It's just that their internal reality has intersected with your internal reality in a way that does not meet up with your expectations. But we're all walking around with our own internal reality that makes complete sense to us. Even the most bizarre human being, it makes sense to them. And if you can see that we're all walking, you are walking around with your own internal reality that probably often says, if only everybody could see it the way I see it, this would be so much better world, you know. But the person next to you is saying the same thing. So to just see how you're getting caught in some idea of what should have happened, and that person might be coming from their own confusion and their own pain and their own fear, or just having their own agenda which is different from yours. Yeah, there's a question here. Wait, there's a microphone right there. Yeah.
Talking into microphones. Okay. I was going to say, how does this intersect with the need to protect yourself from somebody?
Yeah, absolutely. So how does it intersect with the need to protect yourself? It's kind of like what we were saying before about fierce compassion and, you know, healthy boundaries. you can't just say, oh, well, that's their internal reality and we'll let them set the house on fire. No. That you really need to take action. But if you can take action and either have very healthy boundaries, if that's what we're talking about, or stopping somebody doing something in a very strong way, if you can get in touch with the fact that they're operating from their own confusion, when you stop them or take care of yourself, you're at least possibly able to access the compassion that can see their own confusion. But then you take action as needed, because you need to take care and you need to protect. And so instead of having more bitterness and more anger, your heart is open and there's a compassion, a fierce compassion that can forgive the confusion, doesn't forgive the action, but can forgive the confusion of what somebody's doing.
Yeah. And also, forgiveness is really for ourselves. It doesn't mean that we're ever even going to see the person again, necessarily. It depends on the act, and it depends on what's going on. But it doesn't mean that you have to open yourself to future abuse or anything like that. But it's really for ourselves, because otherwise we're locked up in that story, and we can't let it go, and we're looking for it to happen again to us. And it's important to process that, including we can't really bypass grieving. Grieving has to be done. And in our culture, again, we tend to, okay, buck up, get going, get over it, because it's not that comfortable to feel all that pain. And that's where James was talking about, feel it in small amounts. But it is important to feel it, and it is important to communicate the story to a couple of very trusted, close people, not to the world. And certainly, if you're going to live in that story for the rest of your life, that's not going to help you or anybody else. But to be able to, obviously, therapists are great for that, if it's the right therapist, but to be able to really tell your story, feel your pain, and let go of it for yourself.
And take care of yourself and really respect yourself and respect your needs. There's this beautiful line from Desmond Tutu, who was the architect of the forgiveness process after apartheid in South Africa. I quote him in my book. He says, forgiveness is the highest form of self-interest. I need to forgive so that my own anger and lust for revenge does not corrode my own being. Because we're the ones, and you might not be ready, you can't hurry up the process. You might have to go through the healing and the trauma and the rage and all that hurt, but we're the ones that are locked in that bitterness. The Buddha has this example of holding on to anger, like taking a hot coal, wanting to hurt the other person, and not realizing you're the one that's getting burned. Or drinking poison and hoping the other person is going to get sick. You know, so we're the ones, we're learning perhaps to let go of that bitterness when it's time, as the highest form of self-interest. Okay, yeah, hand, and then we'll do a little process around this. Yeah,
thank you. I often work with clients who have experienced a lot of trauma, especially childhood sexual abuse. And so how can we apply this, or how could I apply this more to my work with those clients?
Yeah, well, first of all, there is some wonderful trauma modalities. Like I said, somatic experiencing, EMDR, and other modalities that the body has the trauma locked inside of them. And so it's not something that you can just, you know, say, oh, okay, now you can, you might not be ready to forgive. and you can't hurry it up. And so you start by just forgiving yourself for being right where you're at and not being unrealistic in what you're hoping or expecting. And you just being there and being a witness for their pain, if you can let it be heard without it overwhelming you, and it's important to take care of yourself in that as well. Little by little, when that person is, when the healing is ready, then they will, perhaps that's available. But you have to really honor the process and not hurry it up. Okay, so let's do a little bit of forgiveness as a part of, in this context of letting go. Okay? Letting go of the past. And what we'll do is both asking and extending forgiveness. So, again, this can be an internal process, and I invite you to, once again, close your eyes and sit up so that you're really here for it. And first, in asking forgiveness, you might bring to mind someone that you may have harmed in some way, or someone who there's some unresolved stuff that perhaps you've been an agent or a catalyst for some suffering, something that perhaps you regret. And now imagine that person is right here with you. Just imagine they're right here in front of you. And if you can, first just allow any feelings of remorse to arise. And you might reflect on the confusion or ignorance that might have caused you to act in the way you did. Not to excuse yourself for the behavior, but to awaken compassionate understanding. Just get in touch with the confusion that might have been behind your action. Maybe you were stressed. Maybe you were frightened. Maybe you were wanting something to be a certain way. Just see if you can get in touch with the source of whatever unskillful action. And see if you can bring some compassion to that confusion inside. And while you're feeling that compassion and that remorse, you might silently say to this person, "I'm truly sorry for any harm I might have caused you. I'm truly sorry. And I hope in time you can see in your heart to forgive me." And as you say that, just imagine the person hearing your sincerity and taking in your words and perhaps forgiving you. Whether or not they do, don't put that on them as an expectation. Just let your vulnerability touch their heart I'm truly sorry. And just notice how that feels in your body and in your mind and in your heart. Is your own vulnerability is what can touch another person's heart. And you might, once again, for a moment, just if it feels right, just to put your hand on your heart and to bring some tenderness to yourself. And now, come into your body and get grounded in that. And now that we first asked forgiveness, we can practice extending forgiveness. Just like we do things out of our own confusion, others do as well. And so, first take a few mindful breaths. And now extending, offering forgiveness as a practice of letting go. As it said, to err is human, to forgive divine. Or as Jesus said on the cross, forgive them, they know not what they do. One of the most profound teachings in all of spirituality. And so in this practice of letting go, bring someone to mind who's hurt you or harmed you in some way. And again, as we said before, you might not take the most intense, if you're not ready to forgive or it's too trauma-laden, then you might pick something that's a little bit more accessible. But if you can, bring someone to mind who has caused you some pain or some hurt. Just as you reflected on how you could do that a little while ago. And imagine that person in front of you. And reflect on the confusion or the ignorance that may have caused him or her to harm you. Again, not to overlook the actions, but to open your heart with compassion. Just to see the confusion, the ignorance that causes somebody to act in a certain way that's painful. And if you can get in touch with that, you might offer forgiveness by silently saying to them, for any harm you may have caused me, intentionally or unintentionally, I forgive you. I forgive your confusion. And imagine that person taking in your words and feeling your forgiveness. Grateful for your understanding and your compassion. Notice how that feels. And if you're not quite ready to forgive the other person, then forgive yourself for being just where you are. Or if that person seems not worthy of your forgiveness, you might imagine them as a small child, afraid, confused. Let your heart soften and feel the relief as you let go of the tight feelings. Just to see a little bit of softening. What it would be like to let go of carrying on that pain. This on? Yeah. How are we doing? We okay? It's a lot. This, you know, this letting go stuff isn't kindergarten. This is big. But when you think about it, how we carry around so much pain, one thing I like to think about with forgiveness is that it is an acknowledgement how things can change and people can grow. But when we hold on in a particular moment what happened to us, just imagine in your most humbling moment, there you are losing it with your kid, for instance, and somebody takes a snapshot and says, "Ooh, that's a pretty unpleasant person," right? And then they put it in their pocket and a month later, pull it out, yep, still a pretty unpleasant person, you know. That's what we do when we're holding on for years and years. And every time you think of that person and you pick out that picture, there they are and you get activated. They might be on a beach in Kauai having the greatest time and there you are, yeah, that rotten SOB. That's what we do. So that's, you know, forgiveness is the highest form of self-interest. So before we take a break, any questions that might have come up from that? Yeah, let's, here, raise your hand. And there's a mic coming. And then we'll take a break and we'll come back and do a little bit more about letting go of our stories and then we'll move to the one more part. Yes.
When unpleasant feelings come up...
Really close to your mouth. Yeah.
Okay. When unpleasant feelings come up, I think of this part from A Course in Miracles, and I think I'm paraphrasing something like, there is another way of looking at this.
There is what?
There is another way of looking at this.
There's another way of looking at this.
So I think what my mind is trying to do is trying to find a fast track past the grieving part.
Yeah.
So I like that idea that I could just look at it differently, but I don't know if that's really the right way to do it.
You know, there's no one right way. The grieving part might be part of it, is often an essential part of it. But in a moment, if you see clearly, oh, they were just confused. Oh, that's just how they are or were in that moment. In a moment, you can have a very different way of relating to the story, to the events. And it's not necessarily cheating or bypassing if you truly see, oh, that was what was going on. If you can remove the blame, for instance, as an example, there's a, I saw a poster. It was at UC Berkeley. We live in Berkeley, and it was in the campus, one of the buildings. And there was this sad child, and the words on the poster said, "A child brought up in a house of domestic violence is 700 times more likely to be involved in domestic violence in their adulthood, whether on the receiving or the giving end." And when I read that, it was like, oh, it removes the blame. It's just something gets passed on. And I had a completely different way of holding somebody's really heinous actions. Oh, this is just a legacy that was passed on. Boom. There was a whole lot of letting go. And it's just seeing things in a different way. And if there's another way to see it, where we remove the blame and just see its causes and conditions, it doesn't mean necessarily that you bypass the grieving or the hurt or the pain, but you're just holding it in a different way. And they're both part of that healing process.
Yeah, I do that thing where I visualize a person as a child, and I really, it's such a very easy way for me to really get into that compassion. And so I don't hold on to much anger. It's more, I like that, this idea of another way of looking at this, when I feel panic or the PTSD stuff or some sadness. And again, I'm not sure if that's really going to work for me.
Yeah, I would, especially with trauma, and we spoke a little bit before, you know, it's so important to be not doing this by yourself when you've got some heavy stuff to heal from and process. So it's good that you're doing that. And we can't do it all by ourselves. That's why refuge in like-minded friendship and community and wise people is so, so important. So you don't have to figure it out yourself, but be really patient with your process and with the pain that's in there. And holding it in another way gives a little bit more space. So keep
Thank
up
you.
that good work. Here's one right here. Yeah.
Thank you. In the case of trauma, I personally feel it's important not to bypass the stage of anger and holding perpetrators accountable.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to kind of name that, because this felt a little bit like perhaps if I understand that my perpetrator was perpetrated upon, it will lead to compassion. And, you know, one of the most useful things that was said to me by a therapist was like, don't worry about the compassion. That'll come later. Mm-hmm. You need to have the anger first.
Yeah, I completely agree. That's what I said, you know, don't pick the most intense thing, because you might not be ready to heal from that. And you have to feel all the rage and all the anger and all the hurt. And I completely, you know, agree and support that. That's where you really need help and support in processing all those feelings. Yeah, thank you. Okay. How about before we take a little break? What's that? Oh, are you gonna do that? Okay, all right. Go ahead. Jane is gonna be leading.
Okay. Oops. Before we take a break, might be good to just do a meditation
just to calm and soothe ourselves if something has come up. So just sit comfortably and close your eyes if you want to. And when the body gets activated, one of the best things we can do is to breathe deeply and fully in the belly. So try to really take in some slow inhalations and exhalations, pushing that part above and below the navel out and allowing it to come back in. And just try that several times, moving as deeply as possible. And as fully as possible. And if your mind wanders, just bring it back to the rising, falling of the belly, exaggerating it even a little bit. Really bringing that air in and all the way down so that your lungs fill and your belly fills. If you're agitated, slow down your breathing. Have it be really full and deep and slow. Now, while doing this, bring to mind an act of kindness that was given to you. Could be someone just smiling at you recently, or opening a door, or pointing out the way. It could be a very small one, but allow that act of kindness in. Allow it to gladden your heart. While you're continually breathing deeply, fully, and slowly, and allow another act of kindness in. It could be from another living being. It could be from nature. It could be from the trees, the sky, the beauty around you today. Just allow something in that feeds you. And allow one more really nourishing image or memory in. It could be an act of kindness. It could just be remembering a person who, or being a pet who makes you smile. And if you want to put your hand on your heart or some other soothing place, just press in a little bit, allowing the oxytocin response. Just wishing yourself well. This is a pattern interrupt where if the things are becoming too intense, you can back off from the intense feelings or memories and take care of yourself. So you might want to play around with this in the coming week, just in a small way. Play around with the light stuff. If something doesn't quite go your way, just try it. Just try checking in with yourself, breathing deeply and slowly and fully. And bringing to mind something good. And wishing yourself well. So we have more to cover, but we want to give you a break. So go to the bathroom or step outside. It's a gorgeous day, but come back. We're going to start again in 15 minutes, and we're going to move on to some hopefully happier things.
Okay. Before we move on to another more expansive aspect of letting go, I wanted to finish up this piece around the stories in our mind. We spent a lot of time on letting go of the past and of our hurts and with forgiveness. But there's so many different stories that we can get caught in. Stories about not being enough, not being good enough, because this happened to me when I was filling in the age. I can never whatever, or I'm somebody who always whatever. All these different stories that we carry about who we are, about microphones, about who others are, about life. And as I said, it's not that you can simply hit the erase button and they're gone, but the more you start to see how those stories affect you, the more you see the power that they're having over you, the less power they have over you. It's like you're waking up to the confusion that the mind creates, and it's a classical thing in mythology. You know, all the story, all the myths of when the hero or the heroine doesn't know the name of the monster or the demon, they have tremendous power. But once they find the name of the demon, they lose their power. And in the same way, internally, when we can see, oh, this is where my mind gets caught, then we can start to free ourselves of the power of those stories. So I just wanted to invite you to explore this with your internal world and look at the stories that you might, a story that you might carry. Yes. Here's a mic. Is it on?
Standby.
There it is. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much. When the stories told and the behaviors that those stories have engendered have been so successful for so many years, and then comes a time when the stories told and lived and the behaviors that those stories engendered no longer serve the same function, right, and in fact begin to cause pain, not only internal pain, but pain to your loved ones, and become less advantageous and less effective in terms of how one lives their life.
Yeah.
Those also need to be let go.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah. The stories are one thing. The behavior they engender is where the karmic impact is that much more profound. It's one thing to have a thought. When you put that thought into words and deeds, then the suffering that gets caused is exponential. So it's one thing to just see, oh, this is what my mind does. It's another to see, oh, this causes me to act in this way, and it's so painful. And it can sometimes be even a greater motivation to start to shift once you see. But to have compassion for, oh, this is where what my mind has created. It's created this prison that also spills out to affecting others. Absolutely. So let's just play around with this a little bit, and if it touches something in you that seems worthwhile continuing to explore after our day together, then you might do it and hold it as a practice area and hold it with great kindness and compassion. As I shared that Pema Chodron line, take delight in that which sees the suffering. Just appreciate that you're seeing it, and if you can commit to wanting to go for true well-being, it starts putting you in the right direction. So once again, invite you to close your eyes for a moment. And just reflect, is there a story that you believe about yourself or others or life that keeps you from experiencing true well-being? What story do you believe that limits you in well-being, internal peace, joy? And when you think of this story as being true, when you take it to be true and you're caught in believing it, how do you experience it in your mind and your body? What happens when the story is running you? And now just imagine for a moment what it would be like if you took it as just a story and you saw through it and you didn't believe that it's the whole truth. You didn't believe in its veracity, and it didn't have that power. And in seeing it, you could let go of the power that it has over you. Just imagine what that would be like if that story didn't run you perhaps the way it does now. If you can imagine, what would it feel like in your mind and your body when you do that? Now, I would suggest when you find yourself caught up in an internal struggle to ask yourself, what story am I believing right now? It doesn't mean that it will lose all of its power, but you're starting to shine the light of kind awareness on it. Oh, it's just that story. It's the not good enough story. It's the this happened to me story. And therefore, I can't, whatever. It's the life dealt me a rotten hand story. And because of that, I can't, or I always. What story do you believe? And every time you find yourself getting caught, just remembering to ask that, oh, what story am I believing right now? Well, you might even name it, it's that story, with great compassion. You might even write that question on a piece of paper and carry it in your wallet. What story am I believing right now? And just keep on envisioning what it's like every time you notice it with kindness and compassion. And don't add to the judgment. Just know that you are truly letting go of the mental fabrication that's keeping you in prison. Okay. And now, I really would suggest, actually, if you have a piece of paper, you might just write down, this is something I often do in retreats when people come in and they start to see that they're caught in their story. I do write down on a piece of paper sometimes and say, I have a prescription for you. This is your RX. And I write down, what story am I believing right now? And it's very powerful if you can see, oh, I'm just frightening myself. I'm just painting a tiger and scaring myself. I'm just creating this smallness in my mind. And what if this isn't true? Byron Katie was here yesterday. That's one of her main practices when she... when you find yourself caught, you know, is this true? is this really true? And then turning it around. It's the same thing. So in the letting go, just want to communicate that letting go doesn't mean getting rid of. It just means letting go of the power that something has over you and honoring it, seeing it. You know, we talked before about fear, and the fear story is there. Just metaphorically, you can extrapolate from this. When I see fear is running the show, I take it out of the driver's seat, put it in the passenger seat, put a seatbelt around it, put a helmet around on it so it doesn't get freaked out. I don't want to throw it out of the car. It's just too freaked out for that. I want to honor it. I want to say, yes, I really get that you're scared and you don't get the keys to the car. And in the same way, when you see that there's this story running you, it's not like you say, oh, stop that already. It's, oh, yeah, wow, that's been practiced a while. Okay, you just take it out of running the show. Oh, yeah, it's tape number 17, the little boy story that didn't get enough love, whatever. And not let it run you. So this is something, like I said, that's one of my main practices. What story am I believing? Or sometimes say, what thought am I believing right now? Because the awareness that sees is even more powerful than the story. Once you see, you are holding that story in a much bigger context. Oh, it's like you've busted the whole thing. Oh, my mind was just creating this. Wow. That's where that one thought in a moment, that one thought can turn everything around. Oh, and as the Buddha did with Mara. You know, Mara is the embodiment of confusion, and it's kind of like the Buddhist equivalent to the devil, Mara. And Mara came to the Buddha just before he was enlightened and tried to frighten him, and the Buddha put his hand to the ground and said, you know, I have the right to be here, and he became enlightened. But even after the Buddha was enlightened, in the texts, there are a number of vignettes where Mara comes to see the Buddha and tries to frighten him. And each time the Buddha, like in one vignette, the Mara says, you know, you call yourself an ascetic? You're sleeping 4 hours a night. What kind of a wimp are you? You know. And each time the Buddha says, I see you, Mara. And each time when Mara is seen, he kind of slinks away. Curses, foiled again, you know. And in the same way, it's like you're saying, oh, I see you, Mara, or I see you, confused mind, and I respect and honor all the conditioning, and you don't get to run the show. I see you, Mara. So you might just play around with that. That's how letting go happens, not pushing it away, but just seeing through the insubstantiality of the thought. Oh, it's just a painted tiger. Okay, so now we can move on to the next piece of letting go. And we'll end on an upbeat note in all of this. Hopefully it hasn't been too downbeat as it is. But you need to go through a lot of the hard stuff before you can just say, before you can let go. The beautiful, the full flowering of letting go is generosity, which is an expression of the capacity to let go and the delight in the interconnection that we share between us and others. And it feels really good, doesn't it, when you're feeling generous? That was the first thing that the Buddha would teach lay people, even before meditation, even before morality. He would teach generosity because it's something that we all can understand the delight in sharing. And he has this beautiful quote that in one teaching that was, it's really been at the heart of the awakening joy kind of approach that I have for his teachings. He says, in the middle of being generous, say you are just moved to have it, to be generous or kind with somebody, he says, think to yourself, I'm being generous now. He says, this is a good thing. Not check it out. Everybody see how generous I am. No, that's just reifying your ego. But he says, notice how good it feels for generosity to move through you. Oh, it feels so good. Oh, I'm being generous now. And he says, it gladdens the heart. One gains inspiration in the meaning and inspiration in the truth. Whoops. And that, he says, I call this an equipment of mind to overcome all ill will and hostility. When we're generous, it opens us up. And one can think of lots of different expressions of generosity. Kindness and love is an expression of a generous heart. Compassion is a generous heart. When you are taking delight in the joy of others, there's nothing in it for you but to just see them succeed. How beautiful that is. So to really delight in generosity, and what it is it's the currency of our caring for one another, the stuff that we might share. And as an example, one example I have, we have these, we were given a set of cups that when we were married, we just had our 34th anniversary last week, or a couple weeks ago. Thank you. Worth it. She's worth it. Yeah. For our anniversary, we were given for our wedding, we were given this cup. There's one cup that remains of the four of the original, because you know cups get broken, but there it is on my on our bathroom counter. I get to use the cup. It's on my side, and every time I use it, oh, thank you, Roger. Thank you, Francis. Hi, how you doing? I don't think I could pick that cup up without thinking of them. Isn't that interesting? Think of something that you own that was a gift to you, given by somebody. Maybe something in your house or something that you wear, or some gift. Every time you use it, or most of the times, don't you think of that person? Isn't that amazing? You know? Or the gifts that you've given to others. There's that sense of connection that we can have because it just feels good. Not only not just that you're letting go, but you share and there's this connection. You know, you ever have you're with somebody and you're having you go to the ice cream store, and you've got, and it's really good, this new flavor, you know, burgundy cherry or something like that, you know. And you're with somebody who is on a diet and not eating. And there's that feeling like, oh, you got to try this. You know that feeling? Oh, you got to try this. Oh, go ahead, you know. Because we want to share. Not too big a bite, but try it. You know, you got to try it. Because it just feels good to share. And that's the full flowering of letting go. How we connect with each other just through the stuff that we give, or the attention that we give, the presence that we have for others, or the resources, or the love or the kindness. This is one of the most beautiful expressions of joy that human beings have. And just think about it. There's nothing in it for us. If it's true generosity, which is different than, oh, if I give this, then they'll give me something back. That's not true generosity. And it doesn't feel as good. But when it's coming from a place of, oh, this feels good. This feels so good. There's nothing in it for you except that beautiful capacity of the heart to want to connect and share. You know, that's one of the most fun things about, you know, it's somebody's birthday or it's Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever, you know. It's one thing to get the gifts. Yeah, that's certainly fun. I do like getting gifts, of course. But isn't it so good when you've bought somebody or made something for somebody and you say, here, this is for you. You know that feeling? It's so good. What's in it for you other than feeling good about expressing your love? For some people, it's much easier to give than to receive. So I just wanted to share a little bit, Karma 101, about the exchange of gifts in generosity. That the power, the karmic power of a gift exchange depends upon the purity in the heart of the giver, the purity of the gift, and the purity in the heart of the one receiving the gift. So, if you're not able to receive, and some people, receiving is not so easy. Some people, oh, it's easy to give, but, oh, to receive. If you're not able to receive, you're really taking away from the karmic impact of the one who's giving. Have you ever given somebody something and they say, oh, you shouldn't have done that? You know? Oh, why did you do that? Oh, you shouldn't have done that. And then you think, maybe I shouldn't have done it. You know? It doesn't feel so good. It doesn't feel so complete. But when you've given something to someone and they say, oh, thank you so much. That's so sweet of you. That's so thoughtful. They're receiving it graciously is a gift to you. So if you're one of those people that receiving doesn't come as easily to as giving, just realize that you're not doing anybody a favor by playing small. And by saying, oh no, you shouldn't have done that. But when you can receive and say, oh, thank you so much. What a gift that you're giving to the other. In Dharma circles, it's called being a field of merit for the benefit of the person who's giving. Because their karmic chips go up in there in the great karmic account in the sky when you say, oh, thank you so much. So we want to explore a little bit about this quality of generosity and as a full flowering of letting go. So
we want you to, again, get in a comfortable position. Close your eyes if you want to. I'm going to start with... And just take a look for yourself. How can you be more generous with yourself? And now, how does generosity to yourself or other people bring you joy? So we want to give you a chance again. If you want to, you can stay completely quiet and keep pondering the question for yourself, or move into dyads or triads to exchange with other people, and there'll be about 6 minutes for this. So how can you be more generous with yourself, or how does generosity bring you joy?
Mm-mm. Okay, so you can just turn to one or two people near you and witness as well as share. You're witnessing another's wisdom.
Start finishing up, please. And again, if there are people with the microphones, if anyone wants to share any insights they had about being more generous to themselves or how generosity brings you joy. Yeah. Anybody?
Any observations? One thing that was said just in the break, somebody came up and said, "Well, what if you're a bit over on the self-indulgent side?" So I don't want to presume that we're saying, "Oh, do everything that would give you pleasure." As a way to be generous with yourself or to be kind to yourself. And as we were just talking, sometimes being really kind to yourself means being very honest with yourself and seeing, this is what I need. You know, I need to be more focused. I need to get in touch with what really is fulfilling for me. So this is, it's not a self-indulgent practice. It's true self-compassion and self-care means sometimes doing the making the difficult choices and really pushing yourself. So thank you for that, whoever came up with that that comment. So
the woman way in back.
I just thought of something just the second when you said, it seems that when you give someone something and you can really get in touch with your heart.
Yeah.
Because you can really have more compassion and loving kindness, and it brings me to such a good place when I go anywhere and find something special for a certain person, you really think about them, and it makes you happy. I think it makes a lot of people happy to give, because it gives them a way to get out of themselves, especially if they're, you know, it's just another way to connect, yeah, in a deep way. If you know, and it's very pleasurable for both people.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
That's it.
Great.
Everybody wins.
Way over on that side. Thank you.
Hi, I was just thinking in myself, like, what feels good about generosity? And of course, it's, you know, making someone that I love, you know, feel good. But I think it also feels like the confirmation in myself that the relationship is more important than material things and my ability to kind of extend in that way. Like, it, anyway, it's a giving to myself to be able to feel that way.
Right. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. Oh, here, right up.
One more. One last one right here. Thank you.
I feel like coming here today is generosity to myself, but it's also accepting the generosity of my friend who signed us up and registered us. And just being here feels like an expression of generosity. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you. And remember, we started the day just we're in a field of generosity. Just for a moment, all it takes is a moment to reflect on the thousands of people that from their own generosity said, oh, I want to be part of this. I want to create this, help create this. And here we are being able to receive and receive, oh, thank you. How wonderful. Just for me. Just for you. Just for all of us. Not to miss that it's happening all the time. One of the practices that I find very helpful is to be on the lookout, have your radar out for all the goodness that comes your way. Because it's so easy to get focused on what's not right and this didn't work out and this person's going to disappoint me or whatever. Whereas if you start to look for all the ways that life really loves you, it's another one way of putting it, so that anytime, say, somebody opens a door for you or genuinely asks, hi, how are you? Or gives you a smile. One way to think of it, don't miss that connection of goodwill coming your way. And a whole other dimension, which is another practice that I find helpful, is seeing that person as an agent of life letting you know that you are loved. And once you start opening to it and seeing how many ways, like, here it is, oh, thank you, or, hi, how are you? Once you start tuning into it, you see it everywhere. And one of the hardest things is letting it in for people. Oh, am I worthy of this? Or what if, is this dangerous to let in all this love? You know, I better keep myself protected here, you know. But once you let it in, you can't hold it all. There's so much that comes your way. There's so much goodness in life that comes your way, particularly if you are so fortunate to be living in the Bay Area, to be able to come to Spirit Rock for a day long on letting go. Something must be going right in your life, right? To love the Dharma, love the truth. Once you start letting it in, you can't hold it all. The only thing you can do, really, is let yourself feel it and send it out again. And so you become what I like to call a metta recycling machine. Metta being loving kindness, where there's goodwill coming in, you let it touch you and feel gratitude and just send it out and keep on tuning into all the goodness around you. It's a good way to go through life. Because the more you tune into the goodness around you, the more you actually not only see it, but bring it out of people. Just like when somebody is tuning into your goodness, we're tuning into what touches them about you. You can feel that, can't you? It's very different than somebody who you sense is sitting there judging you and looking at all your flaws you know, makes you feel small. But when somebody is saying, is, you know, they're seeing, this is a beautiful person, you feel beautiful. So you're looking for the good itself actually pulls it out. It's like love finding itself or goodness finding itself and awakening itself. And then you become an agent of that awakening for others as well.
I wondered, in the Mindful Self-Compassion course, we look at the metta, which many of you know, traditional phrases that we say over and over again to ourselves, and like, may I be safe, happy, healthy, and peaceful. And in the course, we write our own phrases, because sometimes those can be more nourishing and direct. And so my phrase as of the past some months has been, may I be open to take in and savor all the love and beauty around me. And just that, just that one simple phrase and saying it, you know, it does change my reality.
Just tuning into all the goodness, yeah. One thing that we didn't really talk about, I'll just mention briefly and maybe do a very short short sit, just a couple of minutes, is that letting go inherently is letting things be just as they are. Letting go of your agenda for how things should be. And this is ultimately opening up to a sense of surrender of the control that you didn't have. And to be able to trust life, when you show up and show up with goodwill and aren't fighting things and just seeing, even when things are hard, oh, it's like this. Life is like this. How can I learn in this moment? And give up your illusion of control. This is really what that letting go that leads to the third noble truth, the end of suffering, is all about. Just to let it be how it is. To do your part, to give your input, to do the best you can, to have the courage to change the things you can, the serenity to accept the things that you can't, and the wisdom to know the difference. Doesn't mean that you're just a wallflower and don't act in life, but to have the serenity to accept the things that you can't change, to let it go and to open up to how things are, then you can respond with wisdom. And when you do, when you're able to quiet down that frustrating fighting with life, then you can listen to the wisdom that's right inside. It's right inside of us. If we just ask the right question and listen instead of try so desperately to figure out the right answer, we can listen and hear the right answer. So just for the next couple of minutes, I'd like us to do one last quiet sitting. And in this sitting, absolutely letting go of doing anything. Letting it be a complete act of surrender, of allowing this moment to be just the way it is, and receive this moment of our lives. nothing to do, nothing to make happen. Just receive this moment of your life. So now that you've practiced that for a couple of minutes, try doing that for the rest of your life. You'll be just fine. So, do you want to end with your, so just a closing.
I really, a couple of kind people came up to me today and said, oh, I'm so sorry, you're missing the shower. And each time they did that, I was kind of taken by surprise because I had honestly forgotten it for the time being. And I was just really glad to be here. So thank you so much. You made the day really alive and warm, and your enthusiasm, and really looking at your own lives and how you can let go and bring more happiness into your lives is really inspiring. So thank you for that. And I hope you really carry some practices that meant anything to you today into your life. And I want to close with a poem by Dana Faltz called Let It Go.
And we'll be out of here in a moment and dedicate the merit. If you can stay for the last minute, that would be great.
Let go of the ways you thought your life would unfold, the holding of plans or dreams or expectations. Let it all go. Save your strength to swim with the tide. The choice to fight what is here before you now will only result in struggle, fear, and desperate attempts to flee from the very energy you long for. Let it go. Let it all go and flow with the grace that washes through your days, whether you receive it gently or with all your quills raised to defend against invaders. Take this on faith. The mind may never find the explanations that it seeks, but you will move forward nonetheless. Let go, and the wave's crest will carry you to unknown shores, beyond your wildest dreams or destinations. Let it all go and find the place of rest and peace and certain transformation.
That's Dana Faltz, Let It Go. That's also, it's an awakening joy, is you have the book. So we'll just dedicate the merit of the day. I want to say also that I really enjoyed spending the day with you, and hope our paths cross again soon. So all the goodness that is in this room and that we've created here together. May it move through us and from this room, ripple out and touch everyone in our lives, and continue to ripple out to be of benefit to all beings everywhere. May all know the highest happiness. May all know the deep peace of a mind free of attachment. May all know true freedom and share their love well.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.